Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Booth 61. Featuring movers and shakers on the Atlanta tech scene, organizations serving the tech market, and the inspired people who lead them. Now here's your host, Ricky Steele.
Welcome and thank you for visiting Booth 61. I am Ricky Steele, and I passionately serve as the Chief Development Officer for Hunter Technical Resources, Atlanta's premier IT staffing firm. We have a very exciting show for you today, and we're going to jump right in. But first, I want to introduce our producer and my dear friend, Kevin Finn. Kevin is a master at the control board and makes this show and me sound much better than I ever would otherwise. But Kevin's also a very accomplished host and hosts a number of shows right here on Business Radio X. So, Kevin, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Ricky. Well, I went to a Macallan free taste testing last night and got to taste all the different Macallan scotches, and it was delightful. It was a really good time.
One taste and you would have been rolling me out the door. not a scotch drinker by any stretch, but it sounds like it was fun. I missed you last Wednesday.
I did too, but I think you were having a better time than I was. So
I was enjoying the beach. It was a lot of fun.
What beach did you go to? You didn't tell me. You didn't
Orange Beach,
me along.
Alabama.
Okay.
The capital of the Redneck Riviera, and I am the chief. So it was fun.
Well, you got a nice tan going on.
Thank you very much. Today I'm very thrilled to have as my guest Terry Kim. Terry is the founder of Check Action, and Eugene Yukin, who is the founder of Transcripts HQ. Terry has spent some time at Cisco and was also one, he's one of my heroes now that I've met him because I know he's a veteran, a proud veteran of the United States Air Force. Eugene is an Emory graduate and formerly worked in the United States Senate and in the really the news and business and journalism with Global Business Reports. Welcome to Booth 61, Terry and Eugene.
Thank you, Ricky.
Very glad to have you both here. I want to ask you a series of questions that either one or both of you are invited to answer, and then we're going to kind of move to more specific questions about each of your companies. It's such a thrill to have you here because you were highly recommended by two of my favorite people in Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Kyle Porter and Johnson Cook, who have both sat in the chairs that you're sitting in. They are with what they're doing over there with David and Atlanta Tech Village. It's just so exciting that you're two of the young superstars that they're counting on for great things, and they highly recommended you. So maybe before we get started, we can start to my left with Terry, and then we'll go to Eugene. Just give our audience maybe a couple of minute overview of your career, how you got to this point. You can tell us that you've got two children, or we can go personal as you want to go, but just kind of open it up and share with the audience a little bit about yourself, Terry.
Sure, Ricky. Name is Terry Kim, and I was actually born and raised in Seoul, Korea, and my background is I come from being a military brat, traveled all over, but mainly my dad was stationed in Korea and came to the States in year 2000, married my wife in Seoul, Korea, and I have two beautiful daughters. And my career background is 13 years in IT in various roles, from being on a help desk to being a technician, engineer, IT director, you name it. And I've pretty much been in every role in the IT profession. And my last 3 years, as you mentioned, was at Cisco Systems, as a pre-sale solutions architect, designing solutions for mid-sized companies.
Well, I'm very fortunate. The audience does not know this, but I'm going to ask you to share it. Because I am a homer. I am an Atlanta native, born in Crawford Long Hospital a number of years ago. And you're in Atlanta, Georgia by choice, and that just makes my heart go pitter-patter.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit how you got to Atlanta. What first brought you here in just the last year?
Sure. So we started our business in actually New Orleans, Louisiana, and we were looking at where we really wanted to set up headquarters and grow our business. And we actually, myself and my co-founder, traveled all over the U.S. And we went to visit even Boulder, Colorado, went to Austin, Texas, even went to Las Vegas and got a tour of Tony Hsieh's apartment and the downtown project they were doing out there. And that was pretty exciting to see. And we came up here to Atlanta to check out what the Atlanta Tech Village was all about. And I've been following David Cummings' blog for several years. And, you know, I just shot him a cold email, actually. and got in touch with David and told him our story. And next thing you know, he introduced me to Johnson. And we took a road trip out here just to see what the startup scene is like, to see the community. And we just absolutely fell in love with the place and moved up here on in August, first week of August.
And as all young startup companies, you all bought a brand new big house and y'all are living in the suburbs enjoying a good life. Is that how it's working for you?
Not at the moment, Ricky. So, you know, we're treating this kind of like a boot camp. So we're up here for about 4 months on a structured program that we created, myself and our team. And we're right now just right across the street at Cambridge Apartments from the Atlanta Tech Village.
Well, so you're a Buckhead resident. That's
yep,
very prestigious.
Right.
Eugene, tell me a little bit about how you got to this part of the program.
Sure. So thanks, Ricky, for having me on the show. A little bit about myself. So I was born in Moscow in Russia when I was 2 years old. We moved here to the States. My dad is actually a professor at Emory University. So that's how I got to Atlanta. And grew up in Atlanta and went to Emory, studied languages, studied Arabic and Mandarin and Middle Eastern studies. Traveled quite a lot after that, so went to the Middle East and lived there. Had a little stint in the Senate in D.C. for about 10 months. And the last 3 years, I was working as a business journalist overseas. So worked in about 12 countries from Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, Singapore, Alaska. And, having, you know, as a journalist, I was having a lot of pain points with transcription. Mm-hmm. And decided to come back to Atlanta last year and start my own company.
Well, the interesting thing is you were actually helping monitor an election in Lebanon for one organization while President Carter from Emory, where you graduated and where your dad's professor, was also monitoring the same election.
That's right. That's right. It was a short stint. I was a graduate student at the American University of Beirut in Lebanon back in 2008 and 2009. And so the elections were coming up, and it was a pretty exciting period. And so I volunteered as an election monitor. And so my friend was actually working for the Carter Center at the time as an election monitor. So he flew into Beirut, and we hung out. And then the next day we went out to the different districts and started kind of monitoring the votes. So
That's very, very cool. So how did you get hooked up with David Johnson and Kyle and the wonderful folks at Atlanta Tech Village?
Sure. So I came back to Atlanta last August with a mission of starting a tech startup and having no clue about technology, never having any experience really in the whole kind of space. And so I was working out of my living room for quite some time and then decided to kind of reach out and started seeing what the community was like here, the startup community. And I had a conversation with someone. He mentioned the Startup Village event that was just started taking place. It was probably about the second one. And so I decided and summoned, kind of got a little courageous and kind of went to Hypopotamus, which is a startup organization in downtown Atlanta in Midtown. And was there, and so went to the first one. It was really interesting. Heard some really interesting startups do their pitches, and started seeing that there was actually a really interesting community here. Got involved with Hype, and then back in, I think it was December, they had this series called the Fireside Chat series, where one of their first interviews was with David Cummings. And so I went to that interview and saw that David was talking. It was a fascinating story. It was my first time really learning about Pardot and his business, and I came up to him afterwards and I said, hey, you know, I'm starting this new startup, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it. It was right before, you know, the holidays, so he said, hey, reach out back to me in January. I did. He introduced me to Johnson. Met with Johnson back in January, and so one thing led to another, and that's how I got involved with the Atlanta Tech Village.
Well, I'm just wondering if we're going to have to wait till, you know, David gets past puberty before we build a statue in his honor. You can't go anywhere in this city without hearing something about David Cummings. This weekend was at Leadership Atlanta, had something called CoLab at Woodruff Arts Center.
Uh-huh.
Thomas Friedman, 3-time Pulitzer Prize New York Times columnist, and Sir Ken Robinson and Ron Clark from the Ron Clark Academy. But right in the middle of it is David, and David was one of the most sought-after speakers and did a great job. But the ecosystem that he is creating there and both your companies are benefiting from is, I think, as unique as anywhere in the country. What do you guys think?
Absolutely. When we came up here, I mean, one thing we noticed from the village that sets itself apart from other places we visited is that you get instant community And the amount of energy and the tech entrepreneurs there is just unbelievable. So,
yeah, and I mean, same here. I think that it just seems that over the past year, the tech community here in Atlanta has just exploded. You know, it's been amazing, and the support network here has been incredible. And just the emergence of, you know, I had my first meeting with Johnson Cook at the Atlanta Tech Village in January. So it was just, I guess it was the first month after they bought the building and started doing it. And it's just been an incredible experience to see how it's grown, what kind of, you know, help has been there, the type of mentorships that's been available. So it's been really incredible.
If you get the opportunity, you or anyone listening in our audience, go back and listen to John Yates. John Yates is a prominent attorney in Morris, Manning & Martin, but he was on this show maybe 3 or 4 months ago, and he gave the history of the technology community in Atlanta. And I've had people at Georgia Tech tell me that they're thinking about making that a course, just listening to that podcast. But John helped create the foundation of what's here today. David is our new John Yates, and not that John's gone anywhere because he's still very, very active. But David, we'll be talking about for many, many years to come, and Atlanta Tech Village and Johnson and you guys and everything. So it is so exciting for us who have a little age and gray hair on us to see some really brilliant, young, hardworking folks like yourselves in our community. And as again, as Atlanta native, that makes my heart go pitter-patter. I want to spend a little time asking each of you about your companies because I think both of you have a very interesting value proposition. And at any point, if one of you want to ask the other a question or try to trip each other up or, you know, try to have a little fun with each other, that's all well with me as too. But I'll ask you maybe some specific questions, and then we'll kind of at the end close up with some, you know, contact information and things of that nature. So why don't I start with Terry again since he's on my left. Terry, I'm going to ask you the basic question 101. What is Check Action?
Sure. So Check Action is a web-based project management application specifically built for enterprise IT teams. So we make it super easy for IT teams to better plan, collaborate, and execute projects. And with Check Action, our vision is to empower IT teams with an intuitive web application that not only boosts productivity, but helps promote synergy and ultimately simplify their work.
Well, as a technologist at Cisco, was this how did this come about? How did this brainstorm hit? Was it problems that you were having doing project management within that organization?
Sure. So in my career, I've had to always be involved with projects. So having to manage tons of projects and also managing teams and vendors and consultants, life can get pretty chaotic when you're having to juggle a lot of disparate tools. So in my career, I've used Microsoft Project, using Gantt charts, having to use spreadsheets, using email as a form of collaboration, being on the phone constantly, but being in tons of meetings just to even give project updates and status updates. So just out of that, there was some frustration, and I always tried to look for, let's say, a consolidated platform where I can do all this. And obviously, I couldn't find anything, and I knew there had to be a better way. So the idea was never just born, it wasn't like a light bulb that went off, but it was a slow hunch, and over the years, it accumulated and became more powerful. So during my Cisco years is when I met with CIOs, IT directors, and I would see these same challenges and problems that they were facing that I was facing during my career. And that's when it dawned on me, like, wow, hundreds of organizations are having this these problems, and their life is pretty chaotic when it comes to managing projects, teams, and vendors. So that's where I took the idea and decided to launch Check Action.
If we were to pull our computers out and Google project management, we probably don't have enough computing power in the room to get to an end from Google or wherever. How are you going to differentiate Check Action from what's out there today, and what is unique and different that would make me want to invest in your company and go? And I assume the website is checkaction.com?
Yes.
So anyone can go there as we're chatting here now and take a look at what you're doing while you're explaining it. But what's your differentiation?
Sure. So Check Action, what we do as far as product differentiation is that we look at what's currently out on the market. And we talk with our customers closely, and what we find is that there's several reasons that customers don't like what's in the marketplace. But the biggest feedback that we've been getting from customers is that existing platforms are too complex, and they're just too hard to use. And they always have to be using multiple platforms or applications and systems to be able to do the job effectively. But on top of that, I like to just kind of throw out internally at CheckAction, we have this product culture that kind of drives everything we build it at our company. And we like to say we provide the fuel or gas to drive projects to success. And we use the terminology of the acronym GAS, and GAS stands for gamification, automation, and simplification. So with a layer of gamification, we want to provide users some engagement, right? No one loves using spreadsheets or doing Gantt charts, and we've noticed that. So we want to provide this layer where we're currently building a CUDA system so we can give users a sense of appreciation when they accomplish work and some purpose. And secondly, automation, being able to provide and empower IT teams to do ultimately more with less. So what we do with our platform is automate certain workflows to speed things up. And last of all is our foundation. Simplicity is everything, where we really focus on user experience, Ricky. And we have two people that's focused on UI and UX on our team, and we take that very we really focus on making sure that everything is simple and easy to use.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like GAS. That's a great acronym you've come up with. It could go along. Could go a lot of different places with that one. So I like where you went.
Yes.
Who is your ideal customer? Is it going to be a startup? Is it going to be Cisco or Oracle, or is it going to be a mid-level company trying to get its feet wet?
Right. So right now we are targeting what we consider the mid-market space. So we target any business that has anywhere from 100 employees to maybe 1,000-plus employees. And that typically yields an IT department that has maybe anywhere from 5 to maybe up to 40 in staff. And that's where we consider our sweet spot.
That would probably be 98% of the businesses in America, wouldn't it? And the world, for that matter. But
sure. There's like 100,000 businesses that fall into this category in the U.S. alone.
Well, that's great. That's an exciting marketplace. Well, tell us a little bit about what you've done kind of to get here, kind of from your military background, but then also into Cisco that kind of got you to this point where you're ready to pull the trigger and quit your job and move to Atlanta.
So during my Cisco years, I was on the pre-sales team and engineering, coming up with solutions for particularly this market segment. So my customers that I would meet would be typically CIOs, IT directors, and IT project managers on a weekly basis. So in the last 3 years, I was traveling across Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi, covering a pretty large territory. And I would meet about 5 to 6 companies every week. And when I would have these meetings and understand their challenges and their processes, it just grew over time where I really needed to get a platform off the ground and build something from scratch to address these problems. So early in February of this year, decided to take the leap of faith and quit our corporate jobs and make CheckAction a reality.
Was there one single defining moment when you made that decision, and what was the trigger that said, by gosh, I'm going in tomorrow and quitting my job and telling my wife that the paycheck that we've been getting is not coming in, and I got 2 daughters. So walk me through that a little bit. This is not 60 minutes, and we're not trying to do an expose, but I've got a wife and 3 children, and my wife might not have taken so well to that.
Yep, so it was pretty scary. I would say it was one of the hardest decisions I've ever made in my life. Building up a career and, so to speak, a resume is something is more, something more more stable, right? And you have more job security, and especially if you have a family, it's not like you can just, you know, take that jump and just start another venture from scratch. So it was definitely hard. However, every day I would wake up and Check Action is something that I just dreamed of, and just I could not stop thinking about it, Ricky. And to be honest with you, we were looking at just maybe saving up some more money, you know, for a couple more years, and maybe launching it a little bit later, maybe in, you know, 2014 or 2015. Who knows how long it would have taken us to take that leap? But it got to a point where we were like, wow, let's do this. How about we just – it was like after Christmas, I think, and me and my co-founder, Jacob, we were talking about taking the leap, and we're like, how about we just quit like next month maybe in 30 days? How much money do you have in the bank? And it just kind of – the conversation went from there, and next thing you know, like I gave my boss, I think, like a 2 weeks or 3 weeks notice. It was pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked at lunch about the someone once told me the definition of an entrepreneur was someone stupid enough to work 80 hours a week for themselves to keep from working 40 hours a week for someone else, and most of the time without a paycheck. So that does require someone a little bit out there. But it's like the politicians describe running for an election is it's a fire in the belly. And when you experience that fire in the belly, there's not much that's going to put it out unless you take the leap of faith and do what you did. And I admire you a great deal for that. Where do you see the company in the next, you know, 3, 5, 7 years down the road?
So right now we're, you know, at an early stage of our journey right now. And we're trying to really get product market fit and get some customer traction really going. And where do we see ourselves 5 years from now? Ultimately, when we started this journey, we decided that we would take the path of, you know, getting capital and accelerating the business and really growing, ultimately, a $1 billion business. So I would say I'd like to see Check Action 5 years from now with 10,000 customers doing $100 million in revenue.
And as far as the fundraising, I know there's some money involved at Atlanta Tech Village, but are you looking for outside money today or angel or maybe a small VC round?
Yes. So joining Atlanta Ventures Accelerator Program, we did get initial funding that's a convertible note of $120,000, and that would convert to the next qualified finance event where we're looking to raise anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. And we're right now looking to raise our seed round. So we're actively talking with angels, and also we have VCs that we talk with as well.
Well, you're in the hotbed of the ecosystem, so if it's a viable idea and a good opportunity, and with the support you have from the village, then I would think that you'll have a long way to go. You'll be a long way down that road. Any advice you might have for someone that's in your position today, lessons you've learned over the first 6 or 8 months after walking away from that steady paycheck?
There's a lot of lessons, I guess. I've got a whole Moleskine notebook with pages full of them. I've been trying to keep track.
You can write a book. You can write a book. It's going to be good.
I know. So lessons we've learned, definitely mind map out everything. So, you know, from best case scenarios to worst case scenarios, and definitely save a little more cash. We actually ended up saving, I would say, 6 months, giving us 6 months runway before running out of money. And I think our business checking account ended up getting down to like $14 and some change by the time.
That's tight.
Yeah, very tight. So, you know, my advice would be give yourself, you know, extra runway. I would say, you know, maybe 12 months would be something more reasonable versus 6 months. And really take your time in hiring a solid core team and making sure that, you know, you have the right team to go from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
That's tremendous, and I'm very excited, and I hope that anyone listening in will go to www.checkaction.com and learn more about what Terry and his team are putting together. Eugene, it's your turn.
Sure.
Let's start at the very, very beginning, back to question number one. What is Transcripts HQ?
Sure. Well, Transcripts HQ is a really user-friendly transcription and summarization service. And I like to think of it as something that takes what you're saying and converts it into what you meant to say. When you record anything, whether it's an interview, whether it's a meeting, a conference call, or a lecture, there's a lot of chatter. There's a lot of things that people say that they didn't mean to, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And so what Transcripts HQ allows you to do is it allows you to upload all your audio and video content and actually choose the level of summarization or editing you want. So you could be word for word, where we'll type out every single word you said or what we hear, and up all the way up to full editing, where you can actually get a lot of the stuff cut out, and you can actually influence what the end result of the text is going to look like. So if there's a lot of chatter, you can say, please don't transcribe this, or please don't convert this into text. So at the end of the day, you're getting back text that you actually need and that you actually want.
Well, after listening to all of the shows that we've done, this is number 28, I'm thinking that perhaps maybe I should just get them transcribed and not put them online and just mail them to everybody. It might make a little bit more sense when I my poor attempts at humor and that sort of thing. And you can fix all that for me, I understand.
Absolutely. You can just cut away all the jokes, and no jokes will be included in the text.
Well, that might be much better for sure.
But I'm sure your jokes are pretty good. So,
when did you launch the company? And or maybe back up a step further. How did this this came from your journalism background? And give us a little bit of insight on that. And then when you actually pulled the trigger and decided to start this venture.
Sure. So I was working as a business journalist overseas, and my job every single day basically consisted of interviewing CEOs or government officials about sensitive industries like oil and gas and mining. And so, especially overseas, people are very sensitive to what they say. And so when you conduct a 30 or 40-minute interview and you're asking tons of questions, and I was a pretty good journalist, so I could get a lot of insight out of what people were saying, they always had asked me, before you publish anything, I want to see a transcript of my quotes so that I can improve the quotes before anything gets published. And so I would come back home after many long interviews, and I'd plug in my digital recorder into the computer and open up iTunes and put up Microsoft Word and start transcribing and summarizing and cutting away the chatter and doing all that stuff. And transcription was very difficult. Without the right tools, it was just long and dull work, and it was a frustrating experience for me. And not only did I have to transcribe the text or the interviews word for word, I had to summarize them. So I had to cut away the chatter, I had to cut away the jokes, and really summarize a lot of the content into smaller snippets. And so we had a budget to outsource this work, and I started looking for solutions. I knew that voice recognition didn't really do it for me. I mean, it couldn't really transcribe anything accurately, maybe 70%, maybe 60%. And also in the settings where you're sitting around a table and many people are talking and the audio quality might not be so good, it doesn't really make it very good. And so I tried that. I tried freelancers, and, I could train them up and they could be decent. But it wasn't really scalable. You had to train them, and then they would take another assignment. And then also I tried online transcription services, and I found that while some were good, it was a very fragmented market. And more importantly, they would send me word-for-word transcripts. So no matter what, I would still spend hours editing them down. And so that was kind of the pain point. I struggled with this for about 2 years. I loved my job as a journalist, but transcription was very difficult, and it was a big pain point. And so last year I was in China. I was in Hong Kong. I was thinking of getting out of journalism, maybe going into some kind of, investment banking, or it was an exciting time being in Hong Kong. But it was just this pain point, and I had an idea about I had some ideas in my head about how to solve this problem. And so I just took the plunge and came to Atlanta and started this up.
It's amazing, from Hong Kong to Atlanta, GA.
Yep.
Of course, I was coming home for you, but but nonetheless, that's a big jump, no question. Well, how does it work now, and kind of what are the plans for the immediate future?
Sure. Well, ever since we launched in April, and it's been an exciting adventure since then. Initially, my goal with Transcripts HQ was, first of all, addressing both sides. First, the user side. How do you make the user experience incredible? How do you make it a much more user-friendly process than what it is now? And sometimes you go and you type in transcription services into Google, And you can find a lot of sites that look like they were made in the 90s. And it's just not user-friendly. You don't really know how to do it, what you need to do, and things like that. So on one hand, right now the process works is that, you know, you can go ahead and upload your audio and video content, and you automatically choose, in less than a minute, you can check out, you can choose between three editing options. You don't pay until you approve your transcript, so we'll send you your transcript along with your audio recording that you can listen to, you can look through the text, you can request changes, and only once you're happy with it do you actually pay. And so we wanted to address the user experience. We wanted to make the user feel like they can get the transcript that they needed without doing a lot more editing work afterwards. So that's how we address the user side. And also on the transcriber side, you know, transcribers have been considered a thing like low-skilled laborers or bricklayers. And it's actually very analytical work. It takes a lot of intelligence to transcribe, to summarize, to figure out what needs to be cut out, what doesn't need to be cut out. But the tools that they have right now for transcription just are very utilitarian. They're not very good, and they're also very dull. So we wanted to address the transcriber experience to actually give them the tools that makes it funner, that makes it better, and that makes it easier for them to transcribe and then build on that. And so ever since we launched in April, we started getting orders our first week. And since then, we've been discovering that people have been using our platform for many reasons beyond even what I anticipated. So whereas before, it was mostly to address my issues that I had as a journalist. I had universities come and say, hey, this could be a great service for students at universities. So instead of having our lectures transcribed into transcripts, why don't we transcribe them into notes? Or meetings where people would be stuck in these conference calls every single day. They started coming to me and saying, hey, I don't want to get a transcript of this conference call, but can you summarize it? Can you tell me what action items I need to do from what people discussed in this meeting? So it's been a really fascinating journey. And since that point, we've been really developing the platform and kind of going down the verticals and addressing, seeing what kind of services we can tailor towards students and towards meetings and conference calls.
I don't want to ask you too much secret sauce because you're still proprietary. You're still getting the thing off the ground, and I don't want to find out if the guy's name's Fred sitting in the back office doing the transcription. But I just can't even imagine how detailed-oriented and how much of this is physically being done and how much is being done through computerization.
Sure. So initially, the goal was let's build up the tools that at any moment in transcription, if you want it to be accurate, there's nothing that will make it accurate, just that's an automated algorithm. There's no program out there that's going to do it perfectly. So you have to have a human involved at every single stage to make it perfect, to make it 100% accurate. So at this stage, we wanted to create a very intelligent and scalable marketplace, a crowdsourced marketplace where you can get a lot of talent and onboard it and train it, give them the tools that will make their jobs good and give them a good pay, and then actually basically develop a marketplace that you can process high volumes of work and actually not only have it transcribed but summarized. And since we started seeing this growth, we're also now starting to consider how do we integrate voice recognition into this and how do we actually take it a step further and start comparing and start seeing what are we cutting out and then start seeing patterns and then building an algorithm into that so that essentially as we develop, we can take this data and then build on that so that ultimately, we can have a program that can summarize automatically.
What's fascinating is someone has written a couple of books and tried Dragonfly and several. When I listened back or saw what was transcribed, I didn't even know I was the one that spoke. It was unintelligible to some degree.
Yep.
And knowing what you do and have seen some of the work online, it's just fascinating to me. What makes you different, because you're the new kid on the block, to some of the more established companies like, say, maybe a Rev.com or some of the other folks that are in this space and have been here for a while? What is your value proposition that you're doing differently? Is it the editing process maybe that makes you so unique?
Sure. Well, actually, Rev is a great service and it does great word-for-word transcripts. When I was a journalist and I started looking for transcription services, at the time they were called Fox Transcribe and I used them. And they gave me a very accurate word-for-word transcription. The problem was that after I got that transcript back, I spent about 2 hours editing it down.
Okay.
And so I realized, wait a second, you know, I could do something different here. Maybe we could get to a process where I didn't have to do that. And so there's a lot of customers and a lot of businesses that need word-for-word transcripts, like in the medical sphere or in the legal sphere. But what we're trying to do and what makes it super different is that we're actually trying to figure out what is the end result that a specific customer needs. for myself as a journalist, I needed an edited transcript that really kind of, instead of having a 30-page word-for-word transcript, it could be 2 pages long, or it could be 3 pages long. And how do you solve that issue? How do you get a transcriber to understand what they need to cut out? And so that's kind of what we're beginning to develop right now. And then also going down and really kind of making it applicable towards specific segments. So, for example, for students right now at universities, if there's a student with a disability and they need a note taker to sit next to them during a lecture, they're going to get notes either in a piece of paper or maybe typed up on a computer. And sometimes they get transcripts. And it's difficult to read through transcripts. You know, you go through speaker one, speaker two, speaker one, speaker two. And so we thought, well, since we can actually take audio content and convert it into whatever we want, we can actually convert lectures directly into notes. So we have a new service called GetNotes, which is now launching at three paid trials at 3 universities here in Atlanta, at University of Georgia, Kennesaw State, and Emory, where we have students who are going to be going into lectures and recording their lectures and having their lectures directly summarized into notes. And so that's kind of the value proposition that we're bringing. This is what's making us super different, is that we're building a very intelligent transcription service that's very personalized and that really brings the value that you needed to bring it to.
Well, having spent a little time on your website, I love the simplicity of it. You know, some websites you spend about 3 days trying to figure out kind of what they do for a living and then how much it's going to cost me. Your opening page, your landing page says it's $1 a minute. It's $1.25 with some editing and $1.50 for a full edit and summation. I can understand that. That's Peter Rabbit language for an old man like me. I assume that was done very, very definitively and by design.
Yes, absolutely. You know, when I didn't really know what I was doing when I was building the startup, you know, and so I was hearing lots of different streams of information telling me, you know, don't focus on your website, don't focus on your design, just put up a WordPress site and just make it super simple and then just start transcribing. But the whole point that I was trying to do was I wanted to make the customer experience incredible. And so from the very beginning, my focus was on design, was on making the landing page super clean, super understandable, very simple. Because I was going to some transcription websites and I was confused. I didn't know, you know, what do I have to do next? You know, what kind of options do I have? What does the pricing system look like? And so for myself, it was very important to develop a site that really makes it very easy for a user to understand what they have to do, what their options are, and what kind of value they can derive from it.
Well, it's a very clean site. I liked it a great deal. I think you should be commended. Your father is a professor at Emory, and you were a journalist in China. What was it that was that last spark that caused you to jump out of the corporate world and become a 80-hour-a-week person working for half of what you were making or a third of what you were making last year?
Sure. You know, it was funny. I started developing, you know, I was sitting in my interviews. Industry interviews could be pretty boring sometimes. And you're talking about, you know, certain, you know, oil and gas or mining, and especially if you're interviewing hundreds of CEOs in the same industry, it could be kind of dull. And so I was sitting and sometimes I would be interviewing, but in my notebook I would actually be drawing out the business plan for Transcripts HQ, and then, you know, looking up and then asking more questions. And so I was kind of going through this process. I was already getting committed as a journalist to starting to try to solve this issue. And then I remember one day the big moment that happened was that I was talking to one of my mentors, and I was started telling him, you know, look, I have some possibilities here to stay in Hong Kong. I could potentially go into IB. I can do some interesting things here, but I have this idea, and it's a big pain point that I've been struggling with for the past 2 years. And he said, you know what, Eugene, you know, how would you feel like if in 2 years you're sitting in some really nice hotel and you have your nice corporate job and you Google a transcription service or you Google something that you wanted to build up and you see that someone else did it just like you wanted to? How would that make you feel? And I thought about that and I was like, you know what, that would make me feel horrible. And so that was kind of the defining moment. That was the moment that I decided I have to do this no matter what.
Well, you've been into it for, you know, roughly a year now, and what is your favorite thing about being an entrepreneur in addition to signing the paycheck that you receive that has zeros, a lot of zeros on it and not a lot of numbers in front of that zero?
Well, I mean, it's an adventure. It's very fulfilling to see an idea come from nothing and actually starting to take, you know, starting people, to see people get engaged, to actually start using it. and starting to see that problems are getting fixed, that customers are coming back to you and say, hey, this is incredible. You know, I was struggling with this. Now I actually am getting the value that, you know, I wanted to get before and I couldn't find anywhere. So it's, on one hand, it's a very fulfilling kind of aspect of being an entrepreneur, even though it's very challenging. But for me, for myself personally, it's that every day there's a big challenge that you need to solve. It's, you have to be a problem solver. You have to be so creative. And a lot of times in corporate jobs, you just don't have that possibility. You get told what you need to do, and you have to do it. And there's very little input that you can make, or very little problem-solving skills that you can actually can add to a team. And so in this situation, it's really just solving a problem every single day and being creative is just an incredible aspect.
Well, Thomas Friedman said over the weekend at this conference that used to be you go through university or whatever it was for 4, 5, 6 years, and you would go out and find a job. And he says that's over with. Today you go out and create a job, that the entrepreneurial world is here to stay. And even if you take a corporate-type job, you may be a lawyer, but you're really an entrepreneur specializing in law. Or an accountant an entrepreneur specializing in the accounting industry or whatever. So I tip my hat to you, because entrepreneurs are what's made the country what it is today, and it's got nothing to go up, nothing to do but continue to grow as we battle all the countries in the world for growth and economic development and things of that nature. Yep. How difficult was it to launch a company from nothing? I mean, what was that pain point like?
Yeah, it was. It was pretty, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. When you're starting a company for the first time, you honestly have no idea what you're doing. You're shooting in the dark, like you have no clue. So, you know, I was fortunate in that I was able to come back to Atlanta to live with family and to have that support network. I didn't actually have any intention of coming back and living in Atlanta after I left Emory. I loved living abroad. I loved living overseas. So just coming back, it was great to be, you know, with family to support me. And so some of the challenges that was just, you know, figuring out, you know, how do you do it? You know, what do you start with? You know, do you look at the legal aspects first? Do you incorporate? You know, do you look at the web design? Do you find a developer? And so it was just the hardest aspects were, you know, there's lots of information out there, and you have to understand which information is the best or the most trustworthy. And so right now, I think with so many streams of information, it was just kind of a little bit difficult. I was kind of overwhelmed with, okay, well, here's all these resources, but what is the right path? What do I need to do step by step, day by day, to actually get this business running? So it was just, you know, just a kind of a daily struggle of uncertainty and figuring out, you know, where to go. And a week, you know, you look back at the last week and you're like, wow, we actually did something. You know, like we got this far. And then the next week's like, wow, you know, we accomplished something else. And so that was just kind of the process.
You mentioned GetNotes. Is that the favorite part of what you're working on right now at Transcripts HQ, or is there something else that you're having a lot of fun with as well?
Yeah, all the aspects are kind of fun, but GetNotes is really interesting. So GetNotes is the kind of the new name that we have for the student kind of the lecture transcription site that we just launched. And it's definitely very fun. We're doing two things. On one hand, we're kind of – GetNotes is a student site. So, you know, we have these 3-pay trials by universities, and students are starting to use it. On the other hand, GetNotes, what we want to do is we had so many users come to us and say, hey, I have conference calls where, you know, I'm going into these really long meetings, and we're exchanging so many action items and so many things we're, you know, talking around, but we leave the meeting, we take horrible notes, and then we come back and we have no idea what we need to do next, what were the action items that we have to kind of carry out. And so they actually came to me and said, hey, can we take it a step further? Instead of getting a fully edited transcript, can we get a summary of, like, here's what was discussed, here's what we talked about, and here's the action items that, you know, I told Jimmy, hey, send me some emails by next Friday at 3 p.m., and so can you please write this down? So this is actually the next thing that we're working on at the moment. We're planning to launch a meeting, kind of GetNotes meeting site, which would allow people to upload their audio, you know, conference calls or their meetings, record their meetings, and then get back summaries of their meetings and conference calls with a list of action items that was being discussed during those meetings. So that's kind of really exciting. That's what we're working on right now, and we're starting to get our first orders for that. Even though the site's not up yet, we're seeing demand for it already.
I was going to ask you that, because the site I visited was the www.transcriptshq.com, and I was wondering if there was a GetNotes site yet.
Yes, there is a GetNotes site. It's kind of closed off, so it's www.getnotes.co/colleges.
Okay.
Because it's a closed site, it's not completely open
yet.
You're
still kind of beta with University of Georgia, Emory, and Kennesaw State.
Exactly. So it's very much in that beta stage at this point. And very soon you'll be able to go to www.getnotes.co and go directly to the meeting summarization site. So that's kind of our intention right now.
What about money for you? You're a startup company. You've got some money when you went into the village. And do you need money? Do you want to raise some money? What is your goal in the next month for expanding the business?
Sure. So I bootstrapped it initially. So that's how we got to one point. And then earlier this year, in the summer, we got funded by the Atlanta Ventures fund that's also based at the ATV. And so at this point, we're still going on with that. So, you know, we're starting to grow our team. We had a salesperson join us on Monday. And we are looking to get funded additionally. So we're looking to grow the capital a little bit more over the next few months and then kind of hit it hard and really kind of start taking to market much more aggressively than we have been doing so far.
Well, I think that both of you guys got, you know, one heck of a good future. I'm glad you're in Atlanta, and I think that the fact that you're in the village, people believe in you, and you're going to get exposure as many places as you want, and now raising the money, building the team, and that's critical. Your team is critical because how great your service is if you don't have the right sales guys, the right technology people, and the people backing you up every step of the way, then there's nothing but trouble ahead. But you're in that ecosystem. It's going to help you develop that along the way. And I just think that the world will be your oyster. So that's going to be exciting. Well, as we get ready to close, I want to thank both of you for being here. But I want you both to give me kind of a closing statement, any last-minute advice you might have for entrepreneurs who want to launch their own software tech business, because you both come from different angles on that. I'd like to hear that maybe for a minute or two. And then whatever websites or blogs or your Twitter handle, or how do I get in touch with you if I have an idea or I want to ask you a question. So maybe, again, since you've got the floor right now, Eugene, why don't you close us up with maybe a couple of 3 minutes, your advice to entrepreneurs that want to launch a business, then your contact information, and then I'll close the show in, say, 6 or 7 minutes from now.
Sure. So, you know, I was thinking about it before coming on the show, and I think that it's true that at this point, it's never been easier to launch a new business. It's never been easier to launch a site and find a problem and then try to solve it. I think that being an entrepreneur is very challenging, but I think that everyone should try to do it. I think that every single person who has a job, who's seen that there's a problem that they think that they could solve, they should at least try once to start a business. And they'll discover soon enough whether it's for them or not. It may be too challenging. It might not be the right time. They might not be able to execute it properly the first time around, but maybe the second or the third time they will be very successful. But I think that it's just this incredible moment right now that we're living in, where if you see that there's a problem, you can actually solve it, and it's never been easier to do it than right now. So my advice is that, you know, you just have to take chances. If you see a problem, try to solve it. Try to start a business. You know, it might take off. It might not. You know, you might struggle for 3 or 4 months, but man, the learning curve, how much you're going to get out of it. I was thinking of going to business school before starting Transcripts HQ. I realized that in the past year, I've learned so much more than I could have ever gotten out of school.
You have earned your MBA, my friend.
Absolutely. So that's how I feel, at least. You know, I feel that I've definitely learned a ton. And so it's just a great learning experience. So that's my advice. I think that if you see that there's a problem, definitely try to solve it. In terms of my contact information, you can always email me at Eugene, EUGENE, at transcriptshq.com. Also, we have a Facebook fan page, TranscriptsHQ, and, of course, Twitter handle, TranscriptsHQ, and also our TranscriptsHQ group on LinkedIn.
Well, that's great. Terry, your advice to the entrepreneurial, or the person who thinks he's an entrepreneur at heart, And where does he go for he or she go from there? And I just finished reading a book on vacation. Seth Godin basically said some of the same things, that mm-hmm. never in history has it been such an opportunistic time to take a jump and a leap of faith, and that the world's looking for artists. We're not looking for cogs. This is not the Industrial Revolution. We're looking for artists, not Picasso or Springsteen, but people just doing some incredible things and putting their heart and soul, and that's, to me, defines entrepreneurs. It defines you two fellas. Terry?
Yes. So advice for entrepreneurs that want to maybe take this path to develop, you know, software tech business or a tech company, I would say it's a great book I've read and used this book as my guide and framework to start Check Action, actually. And I read it probably like 3 times, and it's a book called Art of Start by Guy Kawasaki. And I used this framework and to start my company, and it helped me throughout the journey, actually. And he mentions to go from idea to launch a software company, there's 7 critical milestones, and I'd like to just share that with the audience. So number one is validate your idea. To Eugene's point, you know, finding that problem, right? But how do you go about validating it? So prove that concept and that there is a need. So validate the idea. And then 2 is design the specifications for what you want to build. So go ahead and do the design first. And I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs, and I see that some people actually make that mistake, you know, of not designing first. So design specifications and then build a prototype, build something, you know. It to Eugene's point, it's so cheap to, you know, use, let's say, freelancers or just the technology to get hosting for your application in the cloud using Amazon or Heroku. There's tons of resources out there. So build a prototype, 3. And then 4 is either continue to bootstrap or fundraise. And that's milestone 4. And then 5 is go ahead and ship the beta product, your first version, out to customers as early as possible and get feedback. And then reiterate and optimize that with feedback, and then ship a final version and hopefully start getting some customer traction as you're trying to get product market fit. And then, and that's 6, shipping the final version. And then 7, the last milestone, is breaking even and getting profitable, right? So that's something I just like to share with the audience. A great book, Art of Start, 7 Milestones to Launch Company. And to best place or best way to get a hold of me is just send an email to founders@checkaction.com. And then you can visit us on our website. And we have a blog on our website as well to get up to date. And from there, you can, you know, click on any of our social links from our website.
Well, that is fantastic. Again, thank you, Terry.
Thank you very much, Eugene, for having us on.
Thank you, Ricky.
I'm looking forward to seeing you guys for many, many years to come and watch you do this one and then your next one and your next one, because you guys aren't in it for one time. I know I know that's the truth. It was a great honor to have you on Booth 61. This is Ricky Steele, and I've finished my coffee in Booth 61. I hope you'll come back and join me for a fresh cup next Wednesday or by listening to any of our past shows anytime at Booth 61 with Ricky Steele. I always like to close our time together by sharing a blessing, hopefully for you, your family, and your business. This blessing comes from the book of Numbers. May the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen. Thank you for dropping by, and join us next week for a fresh cup in Booth 61.